This is Bloomberg Best.
Bloomberg Best is about the insight and the context that we get from our guests.
It's a great way to catch up on some of the stories you might have missed on the Bloomberg.
Stories you're not going to find in any other news organization.
Bloomberg Best. Bloomberg's best stories of the day. Powered by 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries around the world.
I'm June Grosso. On this edition of Bloomberg Best for Wednesday, June 14th, IMF First Deputy David Lipton discusses the Chinese economy.
We see the Chinese government providing some support, both through fiscal policy and the way that credit policy was being managed.
Plus, Bloomberg View columnist Mohamed El Arian talks about the challenges facing central bankers around the world.
The instruments aren't giving them proper readings, and that's really hard to do. And they don't have the visibility enough to the runway.
All this and more coming up in the next hour of Bloomberg Best.
Bloomberg Best is brought to you by Anchin Block & Anchin. If you're a hedge fund manager, you need expert advisors who understand your business. Anchin specializes in middle market hedge funds. You can find your expert partner at Anchin. In a widely expected policy move, the FOMC moved interest rates higher today as the U.S. economy continues on a steady pace of growth. For more on the Fed's decision, Bloomberg's Tom Keene and Scarlett Fu spoke with Deutsche Bank chief international economist Torsten Slok, former Minneapolis Fed president Narayana Kocher-Lakota, and Krishna Mamani, chief investment officer at Oppenheimer Funds.
Is the market signaling a policy error here by the Fed?
I think the market is signaling the fact that the policy of raising rates in an environment where inflation is kind of rolling over is indeed wrong. We can talk as much as we want about Taylor rule and Phillips curve and things like that. I think the one thing this recovery has proved us is the fact that all of those are things of the past. None of them seem to apply at the moment. And we need to kind of think about that and take that into consideration. Sticking to a particular framework that worked in the past that is not working, and you keep working off of that framework, I think is something that the Fed has to think about a little bit more.
Pushing on a string, perhaps.
Absolutely.
So what should the new model be? What framework do we work off of?
We don't know, and that's what the challenge is. And therefore, if you're going to err, you err on the side of caution, which is not take policy actions that have a potential of dislocating the economy.
Let me bring in the good professor from the University of Rochester, Professor Kocher-Lakota, of course, with his work at the Minneapolis Fed for years. Professor, we're talking about the Taylor rule and the idea of discretion and a widening gap towards where the rules tell us to be. Do we need, with our next Fed, our new Fed, are we going to need a more rules-based Fed or one that has Greenspanian discretion?
You know, I think the rule, as Krishna was just saying, your last guest was just saying, I agree with him totally. The rule was something that was estimated as a good description of Fed behavior during the 80s and 90s. I don't think there's any reason to expect that rule to be a good guide to Fed policy today or going forward. If we were following the Taylor rule now, inflation would be even lower and employment would be lower.
Right now, and this goes to the mathematics of which you are claimed for, there's a desire to know what the inertial forces are of the American economy in our monetary system. What are you most focused on in terms of the momentum that will drive the Fed discourse?
I think that the Taylor rule is not the guide I'm looking at. I am looking at employment. I don't think the unemployment rate itself is as good a metric, as good a guide as it used to be in the past. I'm looking for employment to population to continue to go upwards over time. And as that goes upwards, we're going to see more wage acceleration, and that will drive eventually into inflation. But this is all good news. The fact that inflation is as low as it is very good news for the Fed and for the economy. It means that we have more room to increase employment without running into excess inflation. That's good news.
Neil Dutt of Renaissance Macro coming up with some analysis of the Fed statement. The main development, he says, in the statement is that the Fed is monitoring inflation developments closely. That is a direct quote here in the second paragraph. That means, according to Neil Dutt, that the Fed is not going to follow through on hikes if core inflation continues to come in weaker than expected. Torsten, is that your read?
Yeah, I mean, if inflation remains so low, then of course the Fed will continue to be somewhat mystified about what's going on. But I think we have to be a little bit careful about not doing Monday morning quarterbacking here, that everyone who had been sitting at the Fed and everyone who had been on the FOMC meeting around this would have said, well, if we don't have our own frameworks to look at, if we don't have the frameworks that we've been using for all these years, what then should we use? And there really is no alternative. The alternatives that we're throwing around are really not that particularly impressive. So the bottom line is, the Taylor rule, we are already way, way below. We're already way too accommodative relative to that. So in that sense, we are just pleased, and right. I just said it's good news that inflation is low, but it remains still very open what the alternative framework is.
I think, Torsten, yes, the alternative frameworks are not very impressive, but the framework that you are talking about hasn't been very impressive either. That is, if we had, as the gentleman was saying, if we had followed through on the Taylor rule and gotten short rates up to 4%, I think inflation would be negative and employment rate would be significantly lower. That is, unemployment would be significantly higher because that would have been wrong policy.
That was former Minneapolis Fed President Narayana Kocherlakota, Deutsche Bank Chief International Economist Torsten Slok, and Krishna Mamani, Chief Investment Officer at Oppenheimer Funds, speaking with Bloomberg's Tom Keene and Scarlett Fu. Coming up, David Lipton from the IMF discusses the fund's annual China report. You can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg. The International Monetary Fund has raised its growth estimate for China for the second time this year. It's now 6.7%, up from its 6.6% forecast in April. IMF First Deputy Managing Director David Lipton talked about the moves with Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
Well, we've been seeing the performance of the Chinese economy, and there was fairly strong growth in the first quarter. We see strong growth in the rest of the world, which is also helping. We see the Chinese government providing some support, both through fiscal policy and the way that credit policy was being managed. So we think this is the right forecast. Now, we do expect the economy to slow a little during the course of the year, but we think that the 6.7% forecast is the right one.
And you talked about the urgency of reforms now, and there's a consensus among some economists that we have this slower growth in the second half, but stability, and that that's providing something of a window. If that's the case, how big is that window? What is the time frame that policymakers here have to enact these reforms that we've been talking about for some time now?
We'd like, well, first, reforms are underway. We'd like to see those reforms intensified, accelerated, and sustained. And that means the rebalancing of the economy to new technology sectors, to support the household sector, household services, services that households will want, and also to begin to tame the problems of credit growth that have created vulnerabilities in the corporate sector, especially the state-owned enterprise sector, where borrowing has been very substantial. We think all of that should proceed in a steady way in order to reduce those vulnerabilities, in order to find new drivers for the economy over time.
Now, I know last year you said there should be a plan for tackling corporate debt, that that should be a priority, otherwise there would be serious problems. Yeah. Are you seeing that plan put into action?
Well, right now we see two issues. One is that the financial sector has been growing. On that problem, the authorities have really begun to intensify their scrutiny, tightening financial supervision of financial institutions. We think that's welcome and will contain risks in the financial sector. Then there's the question you raised about the lending from the financial sector to the corporations. It's very important that there be deleveraging. So far, credit growth has slowed, but it's still growing, and the ratio of credit to the size of the economy is still rising, and that needs to be brought under control.
Let me ask you about the currency, because they've changed the formulation of fixing to include this counter-cyclical factor. And many people see this as the stronger arm of the state, basically, more control of the currency, and that is a step back for the internationalization of the renminbi. Is that a concern that you share?
You know, we had a discussion of this, and we understand their motivation to be always to be careful, to have some measure of control to avoid undesirable overshooting of the exchange rate. Now, our preference, of course, is that over time, they move to greater exchange rate flexibility with the aim of ultimately having a floating exchange rate system. We believe that they want to go in that direction and that they've designed this mechanism in a way that preserves their ability to continue to introduce greater flexibility over time.
Let me switch focus, if I may, to Greece. We've got the Eurogroup meeting happening tomorrow. How close are we now to a compromise on Greece?
We come into these, we'll be observers at the discussion tomorrow, as we always are. We come into this discussion with the same assessment we've had for a long time, that a program, Greece's program as any other, has to stand on the two legs of suitable policies that will sustain the Greek economy, but also suitable finances, in this case, a suitable debt operation that will make Greece's future sustainable. Now, we think that on the first, that a lot of progress has been made. In our discussions, the other European institutions' discussions with Greece, with the steps Greece has taken, including passing legislation, what's left to be discussed is the debt subject, and we hope that progress can be made on that.
How concerned should we be about the UK economy, given the political uncertainty there after the election and this renewed uncertainty around Brexit?
Well, it's for the UK and Europe to make clear the path forward on Brexit. There obviously will have to be discussions of that in the wake of the election and whatever changes there are within government. We certainly understand that this will be a period of uncertainty until the politics are clarified and the way forward is clear. But we think that the UK economy can continue to do well, and that we certainly hope that the Brexit discussions can proceed in a systematic way.
That was IMF First Deputy Managing Director David Lipton speaking with Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing. Coming up, we'll be speaking with Franklin Resources Chairman Mark Mobius. You can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg.
This is a Bloomberg Quick Take. Context and background on issues of interest.
Our focus is on women on corporate boards with Bloomberg's Laura Colby.
The situation.
Well, in the U.S., 80% of the people who sit on corporate boards at the Standard & Poor's 500 are men, and just 20% are women. So women are pretty far behind.
The background.
What just happened in the past couple of years is that Europe has surpassed the U.S. In terms of the number of women. They have nearly doubled the number of women on boards to about 23-24% in the past 5 years.
The argument.
The idea is to avoid what they call groupthink. If everybody who's sitting in the room is exactly the same, they tend to just agree with each other, and they don't make as good decisions as when the board actually considers diverse points of view or multiple different points of view.
For more on corporate boards or other quick takes, go to BloombergView.com/quicktake, or for terminal customers, go to NIQuick. I'm Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Best on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm June Grosso. Ever since last year's Brexit vote, the fate of the British economy has depended on a clean break from the European Union, an accomplishment which was put in jeopardy last week by the country's disastrous general election. For more, Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix spoke with Mark Mobius, chairman of Franklin Resources, and Marissa Drew, co-head of investment banking at Credit Suisse.
Mark, does this have an impact on Brexit? So I know it's been quite a messy week. We had these snap elections. They didn't quite go to plan for the Tories. But how much of an impact will this have on the Prime Minister?
I think it has a big impact, because I think people are beginning to realize that this whole Brexit situation is causing concern, and it is having an impact on prices. Mm-hmm. Indirectly, you're getting a rise in prices in a number of commodities, number of things that people buy every day. So I think you're definitely going to see a lot of concern about Brexit. I personally believe that the UK is not going to change very much in terms of rules, EU rules, because you're talking about 40 years now adopting EU rules. Why change? You know, this is the question mark.
Yeah. Well, because they voted for Brexit, so I guess the problem is if you vote for something, you have to try and implement it.
Yeah, my feeling is that it's going to be a very soft Brexit. They're just going to remain, things remain pretty much the same. The only difference is that UK won't have a vote, unfortunately.
Okay, which would definitely probably mean that they're worse off. Marisa, when you look at the markets, mm-hmm. right, so let's look at risks around the world.
Sure.
How much is inflation, again, having an impact on the way we view the world? I don't know if we were talking a little bit before about China. Mark, of course, is a frontier markets and emerging markets expert. How would you quantify the world economy right now? Is it an A minus or a C plus?
I would say it's probably somewhere in between, but on with a negative bias. We keep talking about this inflation factor. So here we've got rising inflation, but in most of the world, we've got a problem with the inability to find growth, inability to get returns. And there's so much cash in the system looking to find a home, so that is troubling. And then you've got these exogenous risks that crop up everywhere, whether it's the terror threats or whether it's the politics. And I think all these things in the grand mélange, lead us to be a little bit negatively biased. Now, that having been said, the markets have been raging on,
yeah.
right? And I think that is evidence of people really trying to put money to work to try to chase this yield.
And that's really true in the emerging markets.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and so that's a relative risk thing, as we talked about before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
it's right. I think it's helped emerging markets because, as you say, people are searching for outlets, and some of these emerging markets are paying a much higher yield, and therefore they're searching for that. And I think the expectation of higher inflation means that the real rate will be negative. And we'll get more and more negative as you go forward if they keep interest rates the way they are. Mm-hmm. So that is, again, positive for equity markets generally, mm-hmm. And particularly emerging markets.
So different between UK
yes.
and the Eurozone, right? Where we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing, very low inflation. A lot of that is oil price, I think, driven.
Yeah.
But even the medium-term forecast for the Eurozone mm-hmm. is lower. So it's not just a near-term thing. I think it's an intermediate-term thing as well.
Yeah. Mark, yesterday we spoke to Bill Gross, who was warning that all financial markets are increasingly at risk. Is there any truth in that?
They've always been at risk. Nothing new. I think his statement is really concerning the U.S. and Europe more than emerging markets, because the risk in emerging markets have always been perceived to be higher. So I think it's very much discounted. But you must remember, higher risk also potentially means higher returns, because you have higher volatility
right.
and a chance to...
As long as you have the right bets.
Exactly.
So where do you chase? What are your top three bets today on emerging markets?
Right now, we've been very positive on China because people have been very negative on the financial situation in China. We have not. And that's the reason why we continue to be emphasizing China. India, of course, is growing at a tremendous rate. And Brazil looks very interesting, although there's been, a run-up that went too high. Now it's corrected down. And I think that's really quite interesting.
That was Franklin Resources Chairman Mark Mobius and Marisa Drew from Credit Suisse speaking with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix. And coming up, we'll talk the Fed and the UK election fallout with Bloomberg View columnist Mohamed El-Erian. You can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg.
With the Bloomberg Business of Sports Report, I'm Michael Barr. The owner of the Dallas Mavericks has some advice for new college graduates. There is no such thing as failure. Mark Cuban, speaking on a Thrive Global podcast with Arianna Huffington, says, "One of my favorite sayings is, it doesn't matter how many times you fail. Just have to be right once." Cuban is telling grads to get out there, take risks, and make a ton of mistakes. He says now is the time to fail and learn from it. Major private and state-owned businesses have responded to Chinese President Xi Jinping's call to create a $740 billion sports economy by 2025. Chinese authorities announced an unprecedented rule that would force soccer teams to pay double for new recruits. Clubs that spend $6.6 million on foreign players will incur a national tax in a move to rein in the country's unprofitable clubs. And that is a Bloomberg Business of Sports report. I'm Michael Barr.
Bloomberg Best is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. It's 48 minutes past the hour, and now it's time for Bloomberg View. Here's David Shipley.
So the presidential election was no fluke. The voters of France have put Emmanuel Macron's new party on course for a big parliamentary majority. If this is confirmed in the June 18th runoff, Macron will control not just foreign policy, but domestic policy as well. His task in reforming the French economy certainly won't be easy. What's remarkable is that he might now conceivably succeed. The mainstream parties of the left and center-right, which ran the country for decades, weren't beaten in Sunday's legislative elections so much as crushed. Even so, Macron's victory wasn't overwhelming. Turnout was only 49%, so just 15% of the country's registered voters cast ballots for Macron's candidates. One of Macron's first moves has been to introduce a moralization law, banning government officials from employing family members and mandating them to declare personal interests and produce receipts for their expenses. That was smart, and it's one measure most of the country can get behind. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg View editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more View, please go to BloombergView.com and View Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Thank you, David. And now let's check in with the Bloomberg affiliates to find out what's happening on the nation's most influential radio stations.
I'm Elisa Parenti. On WWJ in Detroit, Toyota says it may consider mergers or acquisitions to get its hands on new automotive technologies.
I'm Courtney Dunhoe on WHAS in Louisville. World coal output fell the most on record last year as consumers turned to cleaner energy.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that Boeing's defense business is eliminating about 50 executive positions.
I'm Ed Corey. On KFBK in Sacramento, I'm reporting some top executives at the California Public Employees Retirement System may get as much as a 5% raise this year.
Thanks, Ed. The Fed, Brexit, and the controversy surrounding the White House. Just a few of the subjects Bloomberg View columnist Mohamed El-Erian discussed earlier with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix and Tom Keene.
Mohamed, if you were to write for Bloomberg View this morning on the politics of Washington, what angle would you take within your idea of the unknown unknowns? What are the unknown unknowns of President Trump?
Good morning, Tom. I would note that we've had no decisive development on the Russian probe. As such, they are going to remain a distraction. And the unknown is whether the technical work that's going on tax reform and infrastructure will ever make it to Congress in a very constructive manner. I think that's an unknown, because the longer these distractions continue, the harder it is for Congress to get to economic governance.
One thing you want to do in any endeavor, Dr. El-Erian, is get to a T decision. You've written about this a lot. Washington seems, as a general history with politics, T decisions are a difficult thing. What is a key T decision for the White House?
I think it's to get the legislation onto the Hill and get a discussion going, a national discussion going on the economy and on the importance of moving forward on pro-growth policies. The longer we wait, Tom, the higher the risk we're going to see.
Is a president capable of that? I mean, is that what this comes down to?
Yeah, he has the people around him who have been working on this. He just needs the political runway. And for that, you've got to clear the distraction, which they haven't been able to do so far.
Yeah, but what happens? What needs to happen, Mohamed, for the distraction to go away?
Yeah, right? That's the big unknown. That's that, because one doesn't know how much is there. And until people figure out how much is there, you can't answer the question, what does it take for it to go away?
Yeah, and who does the president listen to? Is there someone in his administration that actually can go to him and say, look, Mr. President, let's just leave the probe to one side. We really need to focus on this tax reform to get it right and to get it pushed through.
Looking.
So I don't know enough about how the internals of the White House work to answer that question. But what I do know is that...
No one knows.
Yeah, what I do know is the data is softening. The economic data is softening, and that there's a risk that they may see the economy slip back into sub 2% growth.
Mohamed, when you look at WIRP, is it difficult for the Fed to balance?
This is the evolution of the Fed. In the old days, the Fed would look for any excuse not to hike. Now the Fed has become less data dependent, and it's a Fed that is keen on normalizing rates gradually. And I think what the Fed has embarked on is to take the phrase from Ray Dalio that Tom loves, a beautiful normalization. That is what it's seeking.
Mohammed, we had some quite significant headlines from PBOC. How do you put that in the general context of actually, so we trust Chinese numbers, it's getting better, but still with a lot of intervention from the state?
I would say that we are seeing two transitions, a relatively easy one and a hard one. The relatively easy is that they are slowly transitioning from an export-led economy to a more consumption-led economy. The much harder is to stop dependency on credit. And what the PBOC is telling us is that they are going to be more active in trying to accelerate this transition away from debt finance activities. And that is going to be a very tricky operation.
Mohammed, this is the money question. China is dealing with a new normal, aren't they?
They're dealing with three new normals, Tom, and they've talked about all three. The first one is a lower level of growth overall. Second, different drivers of growth. And now we have a third new normal in China, and that is less dependency on credit. And if the PBOC signals that, they're going to follow up by making sure that that actually happens.
Agnostically, do you worry more about Brexit and the impact this has on the economy, or do you worry more, regardless of what happens on Brexit, on just this huge inflation pressure coupled with no wage growth?
I worry most about the latter, but I would formulate it different if I may, Francine. I worry about stagflation. I worry that we are starting to see the winds of stagflation in the UK. Lower wages, more sluggish growth, and inflation going up. Now, part of that is uncertainty that holds back economic activity, but there's also a more fundamental issue that the Bank of England is going to have to decide. What does it do in this environment? And this is a very complicated policy choice.
Right, but how can they decide what they do if they don't even understand what the government wants at this point?
And what the election has done is interesting. As Tom knows, I like to think in terms of distribution. It has moved the mean of the distribution towards a softer Brexit, but it has significantly widened the possible outcomes of Brexit. And that is a very hard environment to operate in when you can have a whole range of potential outcomes.
Within the stagflation is the idea of wage growth and that creeping higher inflation. Janet Yellen is central banker to the world. Does she have to worry about United Kingdom inflation, or is that removed for the prime minister of the moment?
Yeah, that's too removed for Chair Yellen. But she does have to worry about the three puzzles that I don't think economists have a good answer for. Wage determination, inflation dynamics, and productivity. She is also struggling with these three things. And as yet, we really don't understand the new dynamics of very important influences on monetary policy
right, and
growth.
If you run a partial differential of inflation across capital, across labor, across a new technology, let's focus on the new technology. Can we even measure the inflation ramifications of all this digital stuff that we do every day?
I don't think we can as yet, and I don't think we are as yet, and we don't have a good picture. I think of Yellen and of Carney and of Draghi of being pilots in a plane. They're trying to soft land the plane, but the instruments aren't giving them proper readings, and that's really hard to do, and they don't have the visibility enough to the runway. And that's why monetary policy is getting more complicated. Now, the U.S. is in a relatively better shape than the U.K. and Europe.
If you're an academic or you're a central bank like Mark Carney, I mean, how do you view this political mess?
Well, you view the political mess as complicating your handoff from monetary policy to a more comprehensive economic response, which is what the U.K., Europe and the U.S. needs. The hard thing about the U.K. now is what is the alternative?
Right.
Do you try a minority government, which is even harder? Do you call another election? So you end up in the world not of first, second, or third best. You're way down there. You're in the world of fourth and fifth political best. And that's why it's going to be very hard for Prime Minister May to please everybody.
Is the London you grew up with, is it going to really change dramatically in the next 5 or 10 years? The city, Greater London, and out to the universities to the north?
So I think what we're seeing in the universities is really encouraging. We're seeing a surge in innovation. We're seeing mindsets evolve. They are going to play a much more important role. As to what happens to London, there are inherent advantages to London. Those are not going to be completely erased with a hard Brexit. But if London uses the loses the passporting rights, it will be a very different London, Tom.
That was Bloomberg View columnist Mohamed El-Erian speaking with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix and Tom Keane. That's all for this edition of Bloomberg Best. If you have a Bloomberg terminal, you can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. Our show is produced by David Sutcherman and Richard Truman. I'm June Grosso. This is Bloomberg.